Hey everybody, welcome back to the Speaking Podcast. Bill is on vacation. Jessica had a baby, so it's just me. Please don't turn the radio off or your iPod off. Look, I just said radio and iPod, Mary. Like, that is very old manny of me. Your iPhone, your whatever gadget you're listening to, because I got a great guest. I got actor slash writer slash producer slash director. Is there any threat that you're not, Mary O'Neill? Mary O'Neill's here with us, everybody.
I'm bad at math.
Well, it's a quadruple threat at least, right? So Mary, if you don't know, was in the movie that premiered on August 7th. She was, I always forget the names of all the characters. There's Abby and there's a Hannah in there. which one are you, Mary?
I play Ella.
Ella, can I just tell you something? I've written many, many scripts. Not all of them got produced, but there have been times midway through the script, the main character's name changes because one day to the next, I forget what the main character's name is. So my writing partner would look at it and go, who's Jack all of a sudden? Oh, that was John. Yeah, no, I messed up, sorry. But Mary played Ella. And not only that, she gave a lot of notes, added a lot of great stuff to the script all along, because, you know, I don't know if you can tell, Mary, I'm a middle-aged white man. I don't know if you can tell.
I didn't want to assume.
Yeah, no, nobody does. But, you know, one of the things that you try to do is write what you know. And I only know women what they show to me. And I don't want to assume. So there was some stuff that you were like, no, Jay.
Women don't say that.
They don't do that. They don't talk about penises the entire time.
No.
They're not in the room. So you took all that out. The 400 pages of that you took out. But no, Mary did a wonderful job.
It's going to be a long movie about wieners.
Yeah, there's tons of wiener discussion. Did a wonderful job making the script better and acting in the movie in a wonderful way. So you're joining us on the podcast. Thank you, Mary, so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Can I tell you that you took the character that I always, so far we've had Eric and Rib, Tara Erickson and Rib, and I gave them both compliments. I'm going to give you an overall compliment on your character, which was you found an inner warmth that wasn't necessarily on the page. And you took the arc of your character. There's so much subtle stuff that you did in the relationship opening with Tara's character. And I know you guys are friendly offset, so it might have been a little bit easier because of that, but that in no way undercuts the work you did bringing that out. And it was just wonderful to watch. I wanted to say you did great work.
Thank you. Thank you so much. That really means a lot. Yeah, I mean, obviously having that many great scene partners always makes everything easier.
Sure.
And good writing and all of the good direction, all the stuff we had going for us. But and also Tara Erickson is my best friend of like 20 years. So
that makes it a little bit easier as well. Well, you know, throughout the course, and you saw every draft of this thing as it was sort of massaged into place, and the opening up of your character, because you were supposed to be kind of, you know, an ice queen type character that opens up over time. We kept adjusting where that would take place. We didn't want it to be too early. We wanted it to be too late. And I think sort of organically through your acting, not so much the words, you managed to find the exact right moment in every scene to sort of make it a believable arc and not just do it because the plot called for it. So that was, I think it's because you're a writer. You kind of knew, you know, like, all right, it's not yet, Jay. It's got to be here.
Yeah, you can kind of, sense that out of all right, well, if I'm too harsh here, it's not going to play right and the edit isn't going to work.
Right.
Or, you know, if I'm too mean, then so it was a little bit of massaging. And because Tara and I are such good friends, we did a lot of work beforehand.
Right. Well, you kind of have to at this budget level though, right? You have to get
which
done.
I hopefully made Buzz's life easier. And we were just like, we just want to be off book. We almost rehearsed it kind of like a play together. So,
right. Well, you know, it's one of those things, like, because the movie has already premiered, and I'm sure you were doing the same thing I was, which was monitoring Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have a Facebook. I don't have an Instagram, so I don't know what was being said there. I just have all my eggs in the Twitter basket. And you almost, like, I'm sort of immune to criticism at this point because, you know, the people on Twitter are, there's a lot of evil floating around on Twitter.
I'm surprised to hear you say that.
Yeah, it's usually such a nice place, but I have found a lot of enemies there. But one of the things that drives me nuts is like when people will complain about like production values or it's like you people have no idea how little a quarter of a million dollar is in the movie world. The fact that it looks like it does, you guys were magicians to make it look that good. It's just very frustrating. I wish there was a macro I could hit that like gives you a virtual reality tour of what the budgeting of something like this looks like.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I feel like it looked like a million-dollar movie.
It did. It looked way more than expensive than it was.
Yeah, you would have no idea it was 250, but that always bugs me too when A, people have, I don't know, I don't comment on somebody's surgery skills. I don't, you know, like I don't know anything about that. Like, oh, that guy did a terrible open heart surgery. So I mean, it's obviously an easier medium to comment on, but like I'm always like, yeah, you don't know. You try it. You do it.
What? I was telling my wife, I don't mind when somebody has an opinion. Like if you go like, I watched a movie and you know what? It really wasn't my cup of tea. Everybody's allowed to say that. But when you're sitting there going, oh, I don't know, man. Feel like there, I think somebody was like, there should be storm shutters. Why don't they have storm shutters up? It's a, but yeah, well, because we have a set and we can't put storm shutters on and we don't have months to set this all up. So we
Which I feel like at some point was something we all discussed of like, well, can we do that? Can we put wood up? Like, can we? Can't? And it was just like, no, this isn't our house.
No, we didn't build that set. We rented it and we couldn't leave it in a worse shape than it was. So let me ask you something because without getting, without revealing too much, I got the chance to read one of your scripts and I was so mad because I don't like reading other people's work that's good. Do you know what I mean? Like
Yeah, it's like, damn it, why is this so good?
Right, you read it and you kind of go like, well, I write these, so let me take a look here. And you want to be superior to it. I couldn't. It was a wonderful piece of writing. I
Thank
really
you.
loved your script. And we're talking about, we're going to hopefully do some stuff, together. And what I wanted to ask you is, I have acted in some of the movies that I've written, but it's not my passion. The passion for me is like you, it's like to me, it's like raising a kid. Like, I don't want to be there for their whole life. I just want to be there till they're like 9 and then send them off and never see them again. So for me, it's the script. I want to get the script done, send it off. I like collaboration. I like someone like Buzz was a vision to come in and look at the work and then it changes. You take a look at it, you act and everything changes. I like that. Not so much interested in being there for all of that. What's your passion? Where are you at in this industry? If I could say you could do one thing forever, what would be the thing you chose?
It would be acting for sure.
Acting first.
Yeah, I love writing and I love collaborating. I love fostering other writers. I love looking at people's work and giving notes
Right.
and how can we make this better? Or how do we figure this out on a budget level? Or But I'm loath to say I would never write again if it meant I could just act forever. I don't think I'm quite there. There
Right.
might have been a time because I started writing as a vehicle for myself.
Just to get your work done so that you could act in it, right? Was that the idea? Yeah. Okay.
Which is nobody to everyone always the advice to actors is always like, oh, just start writing for yourself. And it's like, well, that it's hard to sell a screenplay too, guys.
Right. None of this is easy.
None of this is, yeah.
There's, and you know, I perform stand up. That's my day job. Depending on how much money I make, I'm either a stand up that writes or a writer that does stand up. It depends on what the finances are from year to year. I think this year I'm a writer who does stand up. But I'll mention the Lifetime movies or the Hallmark movies on stage, and I always get people coming up to me going like, "Oh, I've always wanted to do that. What's your advice?" And the advice is always don't do it. Because if you do, like you have to, if you're asking me what the advice is, you're already not gonna do it. Because the only answer is you gotta do it until someone lets you do it. It's like it's like Fight Club. Did you ever see Fight Club?
Oh, yeah.
Remember when they did the Space Monkeys and they make you wait outside for 3 days before you're allowed in and they just come and yell at how terrible you are? That's Hollywood, right? You have to stand outside for 3 days while people tell you that you're terrible until you're allowed in and you can start doing some stuff.
That is literally the most accurate analogy. You
Right,
have
yeah.
to,
It's
I mean,
awful
because
to
it
order
is. It's just
nutrition.
like, hey, you're garbage
Right.
forever until you're not. And then even then everyone else thinks you're garbage. Like
Right.
the gatekeepers think you're garbage, and then now Twitter thinks you're garbage.
Yeah, someone is always thinking you're garbage. And I've always said that the people who really make it, like get crazy famous, I always think that the reason why their career sometimes takes a dip, like I'm thinking like Cuba Gooding Jr. or like Holly Berry or Channing Tatum there for a while. He didn't win an Oscar, but he got real big. And I think it's because you're so used to hearing no. Like the second the door is open and you can get a yes for anything that pops into your head, you take everything.
I always think that about because I get pretty pissed. I don't know, maybe this is a controversial statement, but I get pretty pissed when big actors take commercials
Right.
because it's that's working. I'm a working class actor. That's
You're
our
stealing from
that's
me.
yeah, like that's my year.
Yeah.
And my health insurance and I don't need Kristen Bell selling Enterprise.
Sure, yeah.
But I have to imagine, like you said, for some of them that it's they struggled for so long that it's like, oh, someone's going to give me a commercial. Like, I understand that, like, scramble of, like, oh, got to take it.
Right.
If
Yeah. Well,
not
it's
for, cool.
how long, I don't know how long this is going to last. I should take everything and just bank all of that money. Well, maybe not. A lot of them don't. But yeah. So it's interesting because in stand-up, like the meat and potatoes, you do the clubs and you do the colleges and you do corporates and you're hoping for a break that lets you do more of that in a bigger way. So for an actor, commercials are the meat and potato roles. That's how you actually function as an actor.
A lot of times, yeah, that's like the big thing that I'm kind of like you. Like, am I a writer actor or actor writer? It depends on the money shakedown that
Depends on
year.
the year.
Yeah. So, but yeah, for the majority of actors, like booking a national commercial that's actually SAG is like that's their year. That can pay with the residuals can support you for the year and
Wait, hold on one second. That's my kids. Annabelle,
no.
come meet Ella from the movie. This is my daughter. You can see she's wearing her Harry Potter.
I love your shirt.
Thank
This
you.
is my other daughter, Penrose.
Hi, Fenrose.
This is Penny
You
and
guys have
Anna Smell.
beautiful names.
Oh, thank you. They named themselves. Well, no, I didn't.
Penrose.
Penrose, that's
No,
right.
my name is Penrose.
Well, it's Penny short for Penrose. Okay, now go be quiet. I'm doing my interview.
Bye, guys.
Just so you know, those are actors I hired. My own kids are very unattractive. So I just,
They're
for the
just
podcast, I like people to think I'm good looking, and my kids are good looking too. So I've always wondered about that because, I know that like a campaign can pay a lot of money, like, six figures kind of stuff. Like, is that true? Like, if you get like a Super Bowl commercial, are you looking at like amazing amounts of money?
So it's kind of harried now. It used to be, yes. It used to be like Super Bowl, you might get a bump. You would make roughly 50 to 70 grand on
Wow.
one just regular national commercial. And then
That's
that would
amazing.
also the union would then you have to make a lot of money to qualify for SAG health insurance. So that would then qualify you for the year for SAG health insurance and all of that. So it really is for like working class actor kind of a pretty big deal. And it's incredibly hard. It's very hard to book national commercials.
Right. The competition
Unfortunately,
must be insane.
it is. I read somewhere that it's like 30,000 people can be submitted for one commercial role.
Wow.
So even to just be called in for the audition is like you should feel lucky that you're there.
Right.
But the problem now is over 75% of big brand commercials are non-union.
Really?
Which means you get could be like I've done non-union commercial, it was a $500 buyout.
How can they do that? What, how does that work? Is that, I mean, I guess anybody can be non-union, but it feels like the SAG would be on the case of all these brands to get them,
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a lot of union actors still do it, but like because work is work, but
Right.
I mean, the brand is allowed to go non-union. I think it's part of the problem is that they're saving their money to get a big celebrity because then
Oh,
that's a different contract, that's a spokesperson contract.
gotcha.
I could be wrong. I don't know. I have a lot of conspiracy theories about it, but.
Well, that's what happens when you're in the entertainment industry, because you don't get a lot of feedback if you don't get it. Mm. Right. So it's not like, you know, you get the call and they go, let me give you the 45 reasons why we went with this other person. All you get is the no, even if that. Sometimes it's just silence. So your brain starts to go like, wait a second. I think I know what's going on here. And the next thing you know, you're like, you got the board up and you have string running from name to name.
Yeah,
you're circling and it goes, that's right. Gap killed Kennedy. That's what happened. It was the Gap.
I'm like, oh, it was my hair this time. It's definitely got to be my hair. I guess I need to change my hair again. Like, I have constant that thought process.
You know what? I've always said redheads. I see more redheads in commercials than I do in regular life. So I think sometimes redheads just stand out just because they, you know, like they don't, you know, they're different looking than other people. So you see somebody with red hair, you're like, oh, that's interesting. I've noticed that. I've been watching. I'm like, there's like, it's like 12% redheads in commercial, but only like 2% in real life.
Something's going on here.
So, you know, the dream, I guess, would be what? To like book like a huge movie and become like a movie idol?
I mean, yeah, like big lofty dreams for sure. Like that, give me an Oscar.
Sure,
for some cool period piece. Yeah.
Home for Purim.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Great movie.
But at this point, I'd be happy to just fully pay my bills with it.
Right.
Break into not that I'm disparaging Lifetime movies, but theatrical release films, and that would be my goal. Even more, I think, over TV, unless it was something really cool on HBO or something,
right,
where I didn't have to get naked every 3 minutes.
Yeah, is that a thing that goes out there? Is there a lot of calls for like nudity kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know Hollywood is a terrible place, but I thought maybe post Me Too, there'd be less like you need to show your boobs to be in this.
Nah, no, they're still out. There's actually a huge one going on right now, and it's set in the 1920s, and they are scrambling really hard. The breakdown keep going out being like, please, we'll give you an extra $500 because they need topless background. Who wants to do background work and then have to be naked?
Wow. I couldn't, you know, it's one of those things where like you sort of have like a sort of a vague idea of like, well, I guess it's kind of hard to be a woman in Hollywood. Like you kind of like have that thought in your head, and then you see like actual real life examples of it, and you're like, oh my God, that is just brutal. You stand in the background with your boobs out for 8 hours. Like, sure, here's $500.
They probably, I'm not sure how it would work with background, but I know if you are called in for a role with nudity, a lot of times before you get the job, it's above the board. It's normally just with the casting director, but like you might have to show like, yeah, this is what my butt looks like.
Oh boy. Yeah. You know, it's, I'm laughing because I'm thinking about how quickly I would be laughed out of any of those. Like if I had to even just show more than just my elbow, they'd be like, oh, you know what? You're physically making us sick. You're going to have to leave now. Let's move on to like nicer topics. I don't want to put you into like a negative headspace there. What is the thing of all the stuff that you've worked, because you have a long CV here of a lot of different stuff that you've done. What's the thing that, because you're not from Hollywood, I would imagine, or I keep saying Hollywood, but LA.
I grew up in Chicago.
Chicago.
Suburbs, yeah.
What is the thing that the people back home got most excited for? Because you call them up and you go like, hey, guess what? I just booked blank. And they have no idea about the industry, so they're like, wow, that's huge. Maybe it isn't so huge in your life, but they're excited about it.
I think people are most excited about this one. I got a lot about Psycho Stormchaser. I got a lot of feedback. I got a lot of like, I had a friend from like junior high hit me up on Instagram, and he was like, I'm going to watch your movie. And I told my wife I knew you, and she didn't believe me.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I was
awesome.
Like, I love that.
That is like the best kind of story. It really is.
I was like, that's a huge compliment. Thank you.
And you know, you don't realize that, you know, even if this kind of shanked, it's over 1 million people watch. You know, like that, like their average for like a new movie is somewhere between 1 and 2 million. And, you know, you're used to, you know, thinking about things in terms of huge, like the Olympics, 140 million people watching. But 2 million people are a lot of people. That's a fairly big percentage of the humans in the United States.
Well, and when you think some movies as well who have theatrical releases don't get that much viewership.
Absolutely.
So, like, I think it's really cool. I normally tend to belittle myself and, like, belittle. And I'm like, that's not that big a deal. My sister was like, I don't know anybody else who's been on TV. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's, you as a performer, you're used to doing that because it's, first off, we had just talked about it. You get so beaten down, you just start to, you know, say, you know what, whatever. If it's fine, yeah, if it happens, it happens, whatever. But it is cool. You know, like I always say to my friends in this business when we start to get down on it, our regular stories are most people's best stories. You know, like there's somebody once who got on TV because they gave an interview to the local news and they've told that story at barbecues for 30 years. Like, whoa, and they build it up into bigger. And like, you know, Diane, she kind of looked me in the eye and said, that was a good interview. Like, that's your life, and that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, I do. It's hard to keep it in perspective, but it does feel better when you do.
Yeah, it's, you know, because your dreams are usually sort of a little bit more distant than your reality, but your reality is really awesome, is what I'm saying, Mary. You're a very talented human doing amazing things.
Thank you. It's when you're also, you know, I think to kind of take the gamble to actually want to make a living doing something in the arts, you have to be very single-minded and you have to be super ambitious. And when you are that way, like once you hit the milestone that you have in your head that you want, then the goalpost moves again.
Oh yeah. No.
So, you know, it's this constant like, oh, okay, well I did that, but who cares? Now I have to do this next thing. And that will be the thing that will make me feel accomplished. Yeah.
I've gone through a lot of therapy to realize that the accomplishment isn't there, it's here, but it's still really hard to do, you know? It's tough. And I've talked about this because I have, like, you know, we call them civilians. It's like the dumbest thing that we do, but I have civilian friends who, like, I had one friend who had a business and his business was flagging a little bit. And I was on the radio all the time, so locally. So I knew the radio guys and I was like, hey, I'll set you up on the radio. You can come in and like, we'll make a segment out of your business. You call in and talk about your business and then you're getting a plug. So I called my friend on the radio and he was like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Yeah, have him call me. Never called. And I was so mad. And then I went to my therapist because I'm insane. I was talking to my therapist about it and he was like, Jay, you do realize that everybody in your circle, like they're the 0.1% of the people dumb enough to follow through on all of the dreams that they had, right? 99.9% of people don't do that. So like you wouldn't, like to you getting an opportunity like that, you would never not take it. You would be on the radio the next day. It was scary for him. Like he, you know, like what was he going to do? He's never done that before.
Yeah.
And it's like that mindset. And when you're surrounded by a whole group of people, like all of your friends are those people, like your world becomes like, well, if I'm not winning, I must be losing. The rest of the world doesn't act like that. So it's hard to.
It is. It's a weird perspective. When I first moved to LA and I would, you know, go back home for a visit and run into somebody from high school at a bar or something. Right. And they'd say, Oh, it's so cool you live in Cali. And I'd be like, nobody calls it Cali, but okay. I wish I could do that. And in my mind, I was like, you don't need to be invited. Just
do it.
Just do it. I just did it.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, yeah, no. I'm like, that's weird to me. But it's like you're saying, that is 100% true.
Yeah, most people are just like, no, I mean, I just was idly thinking about it. And we don't have that. It's like every thought needs to be manifest immediately. Yes. And it's silly, but we do it, you know? And by the way, I just realized that my lamp is so bright, I look like a ghost that's interviewing you. So if you're watching this on YouTube, I'm not dead. And by the way, people who hate me on the podcast, it's going to be a while. We're fighting on this. I want to say, I feel like I'm keeping you, and I've talked a lot. I apologize.
No, not at all.
What's next? What's the other than our project, which I can't wait to collaborate on, what's next for you, Mary?
That and then a Christmas script and more short films. We're always making short films.
Right.
Tara and I are making one in 2 weeks. And then I'm trying to think with Ivan Jurovic, the hot cop.
Yeah, hot cop. Got a lot of people talking about the hot cop.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, we're always collaborating, always trying to stay creative. And then auditioning, just that's the majority of the job. I had some cool ones, one for Westworld and some
other ones
I had to sign NDAs on. So fingers crossed you'll see me on one of those soon.
Well, I would love for you to get that. And I hope that if you do, you will still have time to come back and talk to us. And
oh, of course. Always.
Mary, where can people find you if they're looking for you? If there's big time casting directors that are listening to this podcast, where should they go? Where do you want to plug?
I am at Mary O'Neill on Instagram, mostly on there, but I'm on Twitter a little bit too. And that's also at Mary O'Neill.
Right. And I believe your bio says Twitter is stupid, which sums up Twitter very well. It is a dumb place. I'm Jay Black is funny on Twitter, by the way. So find me there if you're not there. And Mary, thank you so much for coming on. You were so excellent in the movie. You're such a talented writer. I can't wait to see what happens in your career. And I hope that I am a pleasant footnote. See you later, guys.
Thank you so much for having me.